Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. 9 countries spent a total of $83 billion on nuclear weapons in 2022, with the U.S. accounting for half the total at $43 billion. Iran has been holding talks with the U.S. on the nuclear agreement, which Trump had withdrawn from in 2018. The Japanese government has drawn up its first set of policy guidelines on space security. NHK Japan.
A new estimate suggests the world's nuclear powers are steadily spending more on developing their arsenals. People leading the push for abolishment say reversing the trend is only growing harder. Officials at the Nobel Peace Prize-winning International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons cite an ever-changing and challenging security environment. Their estimates say 9 countries spent almost $83 billion on nuclear weapons in 2022, up slightly from the previous year. They include the United States, Russia, Britain, France, and China, which are all recognized as nuclear states under a non-proliferation treaty, plus India, Israel, Pakistan, and North Korea. The United States topped the list with a spend of about $43.7 billion, and China was next at $11.7 billion, and then Russia with $9.6 billion. ICANN officials based their estimates on defense figures disclosed by the governments of those countries. Iran says it has held in direct talks with the United States over its 2015 nuclear agreement. The deal limited Tehran's nuclear development in return for lifting international sanctions. The deal hasn't been enforced since former U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally pulled out in 2018. Iran responded by ramping up its nuclear development. The two countries tried to revive the agreement after U.S. President Joe Biden took office. But the two sides were reportedly at odds over several issues. Discussions had stalled since the last official talks in September. However, a spokesperson with Iran's foreign ministry told reporters Monday that Tehran and Washington have been in touch. The two countries exchanged messages indirectly, using Oman as a mediator. Iran has been enriching uranium to a purity level of about 60%, that is well above the 3.6% threshold set by the 2015 agreement. The Japanese government has drawn up its first set of policy guidelines on space security. This comes as China and Russia are expanding their space programs. The government's Space Development Strategy Headquarters adapted the document during its meeting on Tuesday.
The area of human activity is expanding into space in earnest. Satellites and other space systems will support social activities and security, such as information communications and disaster response. The public and private sectors will work together to accelerate innovation.
Japan aims to join the Combined Space Operations Center, which is operated by the U.S., Britain, Australia, and Canada. The facility monitors attempts to intercept and attack military and commercial satellites. Japan will also work together with its allies and like-minded countries to create international rules on the use of space.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 9865 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. They also podcast at most sites. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, France 24. The European Union announced new rules on the development and use of artificial intelligence. In Helena, Montana, 16 young people have brought a climate change lawsuit questioning whether that state is protecting the environment. Greta Thunberg has graduated from school, but Fridays for School strikes for the climate will continue. The United Nations reports that more than 110 million people have been forced to flee their homes. France 24.
MEPs in Strasbourg have given the okay to what are the world's first sweeping rules on artificial intelligence systems. The goal is to nurture innovation on one hand and curb potential dangers on the other. The rules in the EU's Artificial Intelligence Act have taken on greater urgency with the emergence of ChatGPT and fears that it will, among other things, generate misinformation that could undermine democracy. The EU's Artificial Intelligence Act governs any product or service that uses AI, classifies AI system risk from minimal to unacceptable. Violations would draw fines of up to 30 million euros, or 6% of a company's annual global revenue. In the case of tech giants such as Google and Microsoft, that could amount to billions. Among the provisions in the Act to keep AI in check, there would be a ban on systems using biometric surveillance, emotion recognition, and predictive policing to identify potential criminal activity. EU legislation on AI could take years to fully take effect. To fill in the gap, Europe and the US are drafting a voluntary code of conduct. The UN is also proposing a code. It is warning of grave consequences if guardrails are not put in place.
The proliferation of hate and lies in the digital space is causing grave global harm now. It is fueling conflict, death and destruction now. It is threatening democracy and human rights now.
The UK, meanwhile, is aiming for a position in AI leadership.
I know people are concerned.
It will host a world summit on AI safety this autumn, amid concerns that rules and regulations could be too little, too late to rein in the technology.
It's here at the Lewis and Clark County Courthouse in Helena, Montana, that the U.S.'s first-ever climate change lawsuit has gone to trial. Before District Judge Kathy Seeley, the two-week trial is about whether or not Montana is sufficiently protecting the environment in the face of the climate crisis. There are 16 plaintiffs, all of them young residents. They say fossil fuel-friendly Helena has been approving permits that are against Montana's constitutional requirement to safeguard the environment. Known for its pristine beauty, the state has been hit hard by droughts, wildfires, drying rivers, and shorter winter seasons due to climate change. But the state's assistant attorney general argued in court that the sparsely populated state has a small carbon footprint.
Climate change is a global issue that effectively relegates Montana's role to that of a spectator.
The state tried unsuccessfully to get the case thrown out of court prior to trial, arguing that pushes to curb climate change should be dealt with at the legislative level and not in the courts. For the young plaintiffs, though, Montana, with its vast coal reserves, must be held accountable for support of the fossil fuel industry.
I know that climate change is a global issue, but Montana needs to take responsibility for our part. You can't just blow it off and do nothing about it.
The case could set an important precedent with other lawsuits, according to the nonprofit Oregon law firm Our Children's Trust. It's backing the Montana youth in their case, as well as other young Americans seeking climate justice.
Climate justice!
When do we want it?
Now! back where she started, outside the Swedish parliament. Wearing her traditional student graduation cap, Greta Thunberg staged her final school strike for the climate.
We're going to continue to protest every Friday because, this is only the beginning of the fight.
Thunberg started a climate strike here, outside the parliament building in 2018, at the age of 15, encouraging students to skip classes on Fridays to demand action against climate change. She became the face of a global movement. From Paris to Berlin, she led marches in European capitals. And in 2019, she set sail on a 15-day journey for New York across the Atlantic Ocean.
The debate is shifting in this. I feel like people are taking this more urgently. People are starting to become more aware, slowly, but still. And so that's why I'm doing it. And I know that we need as many as possible to do this.
Attending a UN Climate Action Summit in New York, she delivered an impassioned speech chastising world leaders, saying they were not doing enough.
You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
But her activism has not been without backlash, often being targeted by climate skeptics attempting to undermine her message, including Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Since the start of her movement, millions of students in more than 180 countries have participated in the strikes.
An unprecedented number of people across the world have been forced to flee their homes. That's according to the UNHCR chief, painting a stark picture.
110 million people that have fled because of conflict, persecution, discrimination, violence. Last year, when we announced that for the first time we had gone over 100 million displaced people, well, already 10% more have been added to this figure. It's quite an indictment on the state of our world.
Last year, the UN Refugee Agency recorded 35 emergencies, 3 to 4 times more than a typical year. A list that includes the conflict in Sudan, which has displaced nearly 2 million people since April, and Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, which led to the fastest and largest displacement of people since World War II, some 11 million people. Conflicts in Ethiopia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Myanmar last year displaced more than 1 million people within each country. Most of these 110 million globally have sought refuge within their nation's borders. One third of them, 35 million, have fled to other countries.
The majority of the people that flee not to rich countries, but to countries that are either poor or middle-income countries.
Turkey currently hosts the most refugees with 3.8 million people, followed by Iran with 3.4 million refugees, mostly Afghans.
Those reports were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English and most major podcast sites. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. NATO is in the middle of its biggest air drill, involving 10,000 troops from 25 countries. For decades, the U.S. dollar has reigned supreme in global trade, but the Chinese yuan has become the choice for many economically weak countries. An analyst explains the reason for the shift. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
NATO is starting its biggest ever air drills. They involve thousands of troops and aircraft from 25 countries. Known as Operation Air Defender, most of the drills are being staged in the skies over Germany. The head of the country's air force says the exercise is aimed at demonstrating the alliance's defense capabilities. The Luftwaffe air base in the northern state of Lower Saxony is serving as a central logistics hub for the maneuvers.
Ready for liftoff. NATO is flexing its muscles high up in the sky, this time under German leadership. The goal of this exercise is to practice getting goods and people from A to B in the event of an attack on a NATO country. And in such a scenario, Germany would take on a vital role.
Germany is at the heart of NATO's defense planning because of our central location in Europe. Operations are planned and conducted here. This is where Allied forces are received and supplied. This is the place they march through. This requires enormous logistical support, including from the host nation Germany. We still have a lot of catching up to do here.
The German and US Air Force started planning the maneuver 5 years ago. But with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, NATO exercises like this one have taken on a new significance. NATO says it wants to send a political message of deterrence, and it is willing to interrupt daily life to make it clear. Three flight zones had to be temporarily closed to civilian air traffic, meaning likely delays on some civilian flights. More than 10,000 soldiers from NATO countries are participating in numerous drills in the air and on the ground. But the operation has also drawn criticism. Dietmar Bartsch from Germany's Left Party told national media, defense capabilities are imperative, but there's very little defender and a lot of saber-rattling in the air right now. The maneuver is scheduled to last for until the 23rd of June. No doubt Russia will be watching closely.
For decades, the US dollar has reigned supreme as the world's most important currency. The International Monetary Fund's data shows central banks hold almost 60% of their reserves in US dollars. But in recent times, the dollar's dominance has been called into question, with the Chinese yuan posited as an alternative. Now, while most economists don't expect the yuan to be able to compete with the dollar anytime soon, for economically weak countries like Argentina, being able to pay for imports in a non-dollar currency could be an advantage.
In the suburb of Avellaneda in Buenos Aires, Argentinian company Nusen produces washing machines and refrigerators using Chinese machinery and parts. At company headquarters, its chief financial officer is working out how to pay for these Chinese imports at a time when Argentina is suffering from a shortage of dollars. The Argentinian government has found one solution, an agreement with China to trade in yuan. We have started working with yuan in the first quarter of this year. With this new payment scheme, we're securing the supply of goods in a way. The main challenge is the adaptation for systems. We have yuan accounts abroad, and we have yuan accounts here in Argentina. Keeping yuan in a bank account here is not as common as keeping pesos, dollars, or even euros. But some Chinese banks offer the service. Argentina is one of more than 40 countries with currency swaps with China, a necessity since it lacks international reserves. The other alternative is to directly restrict imports, which also impacts economic activity and inflation. Argentina's economy is expected to fall 3% this year, with an inflation rate of 126%. Haite believes it has the potential to worsen. Exports and imports to Brazil are being replaced by exports and imports from China, and the risk if a financing agreement is implemented with China and not with Brazil, for example, is that this trend will deepen. But economist Julio Cevares sees value in trading in yuan. The use of the Chinese currency will not lead to any dependence or any such strategic subordination. The likely scenario is that soon half of all Argentinian imports will be paid for in yuan.
So to what extent is this part of a broader trend? Let's bring in DW correspondent So Tsung Hang in Taipei. So do you think other countries will start paying for Chinese imports to shore up their dollar reserves?
Yes. To avoid the risk of falling USD assets, many states started to do so, especially Central and South American countries. The renminbi holdings of four countries, Brazil, Chile, Mexico, and Peru, recently approached $30 billion, an increase of about 10 times compared to the end of 2018. For them, China is the number one trading partner, like Brazil. It exports iron ore and soybeans and imports chemicals and machinery. In Chile, the presence of Chinese companies in the electricity business is becoming increasingly prominent. So deepening economic relationship has contributed to the increase of renminbi reserves in this region. And even the U.S. close ally, Israel, diversifies its foreign exchange reserves with 2% slated to be invested in the renminbi, and more countries are ready to do so in Asia.
And so we've also heard a lot about the possibility of a BRICS currency. How likely is that?
Well, Kate, there are a lot of discussion around this topic, and theoretically it can happen, but we don't have a definite answer. It's not 100% positive. But if you ask a lot of experts, they will tell you that it's very likely that new currency would be introduced by the BRICS, because it will be introduced out of a kind of a sense of discontent at the U.S. Because if we look at the GDP size, the BRICS surpass not only the U.S., but also the G7 industrial nations. So it can achieve a level of self-sufficiency in international trade that other monetary unions cannot achieve. And if you look at the five members, they can produce a wider range of goods than other unions. So the new BRICS currency could also be attractive to other non-member countries, because the BRICS play a significant economic role in their respective regions.
All right. To Tsung Han, thank you very much.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. They're also available at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could assist me by supporting this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, help me continue producing this weekly show, which I freely distribute to radio stations and the Internet, like listeners in Bloomington, Indiana, along with both Willits and Upper Lake, California, did this week. Many, many, many thanks. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The Cuban foreign minister said that the U.S. assertions about the alleged presence of a Chinese spy base in Cuba are totally false. Iran and Venezuela announced an increase in bilateral foreign trade as the Iranian president Ibrahim Raisi was visiting as part of a tour that will include Nicaragua and Cuba. There will be a large rally in London on June 24th to stop the extradition of Julian Assange to the U.S. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Cuban Foreign Minister Bruno Rodriguez assured this Monday that statements by the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken about the alleged presence of a Chinese spy base in Cuba is a falsehood. In a report broadcast on national television, Rodriguez denounced that such statements are unsubstantiated and only seek to maintain the economic blockade against the island and the maximum pressure measures that have reinforced it in recent years and that are the object of growing international rejection. He supported the clear position of the government he represents, which also includes the demand to remove the Caribbean nation from the unilateral list of countries that, according to the United States, sponsor terrorism. The head of Cuban diplomacy stressed that Cuba is not a threat to the United States or to any other country, and reiterated the complaint that the northern government applies a policy that threatens and punishes the Cuban population on a daily basis. The foreign minister reaffirmed that these statements correspond to a new disinformation operation, like many others, that have been generated from the northern power in its long history of hostility against Cuba.
Iran and Venezuela have announced their decision to increase the volume of bilateral trade to $20 billion as Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi is visiting the country on the first leg of his tour of three Latin American nations. The announcement came in a joint press conference attended by Raisi and his Venezuelan counterpart Nicolas Maduro in Caracas on Monday, after the two heads of state held bilateral talks. Quote, "We have decided to increase the cooperation between the two countries," Raisi said. Raisi noted that Tehran's relations with Caracas are not ordinary diplomatic ties, but are of a strategic nature. Quote, having common interests, positions, and enemies has helped deepen cooperation between the two countries and make it strategic, Raisi said. The press conference was preceded by an official ceremony during which two country ministers and the top officials signed a total of 19 cooperation agreements and memoranda of understanding. The agreements are aimed at expanding cooperation between Tehran and Caracas in many areas, including in the field of petrochemicals, as the two sides move to expand overall cooperation in the oil sector. The documents will also boost the two countries' cooperation in such areas as information and communications technology, energy, insurance, marine transportation, higher education, agriculture, medicine, culture, and mines. The two countries' high-ranking delegations also engaged in talks on issues of interest on both sides. A high-ranking delegation comprised of ministers of foreign affairs, oil, defense, and health is accompanying Raisi on the five-day tour, which will later take him to Nicaragua and Cuba. During Raisi's regional tour, Iran will sign various cooperation agreements and memoranda of understanding with the three Latin American countries. Iran has close ties with many Latin American states in different fields and seeks to further deepen those relations. The official UK campaign to stop the extradition of Julian Assange is called for a rally to take place this Saturday, June the 24th, in London's Parliamentary Square. Last week, the UK High Court Justice Jonathan Swift denied Julian Assange's July 2022 lodged final appeal against US extradition, which then UK Home Secretary Priti Patel had green-lighted the month prior. This has meant the WikiLeaks founder has spent another year in prolonged isolation waiting. The health of the Australian journalist and publisher of The Undisputable Truth has deteriorated drastically over his four years in remand in London's Belmarsh prison, and fears for his life having long been raised by doctors, while prominent voices have asserted US extradition would mark his end. Ever resilient Stella Assange has explained that Tuesday her husband's lawyers lodged a renewed appeal application, which will proceed to a public hearing before two new judges. This is the final appeal in the UK, and from this decision will come whether or not Julian Assange would be sent to the United States to face the rest of his life in prison. According to one political observer in London, quote, the only crime Julian Assange committed was to expose the crimes against humanity and the violations of human rights by the Empire, the United States of America.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, though there are no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6165. At their website, you can stream the English version on noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. You will have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 27th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years straight, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I am recuperating from spinal surgery, I am staying at a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.